Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Bridgewater Vestal. We are so glad you're here. I know several people have done it already, but I just want to wish you a happy Mother's Day. And Mother's Day is really, in so many ways, a great day for a lot of people and a hard day for others. Even just standing here this morning, over the last 2 years, I've gotten to know many of you. I've heard many of your stories, the joys and the sorrows, the ups and downs. And faces were coming to my mind as we're singing. And I'm thinking of moms who are rejoicing today and moms who are struggling today because things at home aren't what you expected. They aren't going the way you thought. And they don't seem to be heading in a direction that you had hoped for. And I think that that story is actually very consistent with a lot of life. There are moms rejoicing here today, people who are rejoicing that they get to call their moms, whether they live here or across the country, and they just get to say, thank you, I love you, I am so grateful. And then there are people who can't make that call today. And it hurts. As I started thinking about that for today, I started thinking about how our society rejoices in these stories that always have a happy ending. Have you ever noticed that? You know? We like Disney stories, don't we? Because they always end with like everything working out. And here's what I've found. I've found that life in general, and motherhood in particular, doesn't always feel like a Disney story. Would you agree? I'm not a mother. I'm looking from the outside in. I'm one of those, I get to be one of the lucky few who actually get celebrated today because I'm a firstborn. I made my mom a mother. Okay? So today is about me. You're welcome, Mom. Okay? But what I've noticed as I've watched my mom and her story, which wasn't always easy or pretty growing up in a broken family. And then watched my wife, who of course is married to Mr. Wonderful, and yet, that's not true if you don't know, okay? I've realized that life doesn't always feel like a Disney story. Unless, of course, you take the beginning of this one. Do you remember Cinderella? Okay, sometimes for moms, I would guess that this is what life feels like. Would you agree? Like, there's a never-ending cycle. Not that dads can't help or better not be helping, but there's a never-ending cycle of wash the dishes and clean the floors and do this and Cinderella, Cinderella. Seems like that's what it's like. And oftentimes, as I approach the scriptures, as I approach the Bible, and have conversations with people about the Bible, I think a lot of people feel like all the stories in the Bible are Disney stories. It's really easy to think that. It's really easy to think that every story in the Bible is just like, oh, oh. I mean, let's just name a few. There's even a few that Disney has made into movies. You have Joseph becoming the prince of Egypt. Whoa! Like everything's perfect. You have Moses parting the Red Sea. Everything in his life was this giant victory. You have David striking down Goliath. We just finished talking about that. Ruth finding the man of her dreams in a field, by the way. Guess where my wife met me? In a field. Okay. Just saying, you know. Seems to be a theme, okay? Esther, I'm in trouble, by the way, pray for me. Esther becoming the queen of Persia and really delivering an entire people group from genocide. Not to mention Daniel in the lion's den and the stories, just the list goes on and on and on. But our lives don't often feel like a Disney story. Oftentimes they feel more like a story that I heard 6 months ago. Someone came in and sat down with me, and I asked her, "What would you like to see happen?" And her response was, "I would like to feel like there's actually hope. I don't think there's hope at all." That can be how moms feel, how women feel, how ladies who want to be moms but can't, how people who've tried to be moms but didn't get it, people who are struggling with infertility, people whose children have walked away, or people who have lost a child. This is what it can feel like. You can feel very alone. And what I want to show you today is a very difficult story to look at. A story that's not a Disney story. A story that's filled with pain and difficulty. A story that has all sorts of people who feel very alone. And I want you to see what God does in the midst of it. Because you see, the stories in the Bible are filled with people who are messy. The heroes in the Bible, the people we think of as heroes, their stories are gripped with mess and sin and darkness and despair and pain and toil and hurt, and there's a reason for it. The reason is so that we don't look at them and we look up and we look at God. And today I want you to know that because of who God is and what God does, you are not alone. Let me say it again. Because of who God is and what God does, you, in your story, Disney story or not, are not alone. And I'm going to show you. The story is found in Genesis chapter 16. This happened almost 4,000 years ago. 3,800 years ago, a man named Abraham was told by God to get up out of where he lived, Ur of the Chaldees, which is modern-day Iraq, Iran. Get up out of there and go to a land. You don't know where it is, but I'll show you. And I'm going to give you promises, but I haven't told you yet. He said, just go. And so he went. He took his wife. His name at that time was Abram. His wife's name was Sarai. Later, he becomes known as Abraham, okay, father of many nations, and Sarah, okay? Along the way, they had some detours. At one point, they stopped in Egypt. They had this whole deal where Abraham lied about Sarah being his wife because he was afraid that if you take my wife, you'll take my life, you know? He said, if I acknowledge that you're my wife, they're going to kill me because you're so beautiful and everybody's going to want you, and it seems romantic, but it's not. He was being a scaredy cat, you know? And so he says, no, she's my sister. And Pharaoh's about to marry her. And somebody sees Abram and Sarah kissing, and they're like, sister? That's odd. Finally, they make it into the land that God had promised. And God made promises. I'll give you land. I'll give you a family seed. And I'll give you blessing, and through you I'm going to bless every single nation. And at this point, that's been a while ago. Years have passed. In fact, in the text, here in a little bit, we'll find out how many years. Years have passed. They've been waiting on God. But here's the thing. Do you know what the only thing worse than waiting on God is? It's wishing that you had. That's the only thing. And I want to show you what happens when they wish they had. In verse 1, here's what the text tells us. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him. She was struggling with fertility. A story that I know in a room like this is she's not alone. And the first thing that I want to say to you, if that's your story, I just want you to know we would love to talk with you. We would love to connect you with some resources if that's your story and something that you are wrestling with, because I don't want you to wrestle through this alone. But read this again. Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him. Imagine how she felt culturally. This was like she was nothing if she couldn't pass on the line. Sarah felt alone and abandoned. That's how she felt. Maybe you felt that way before. The text goes on. Verse 1, he says this. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him, but she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. Where did this come from? It happened probably in that little trip down to Egypt where, you know, Abram did the dumb thing. And Pharaoh sent them out, said, get out of here. And he sent them with riches. Maybe even a servant. And Sarah starts thinking. The wheels start turning. She starts going, here I am. I'm getting older and older. The promise was there. God said we'd have children. We don't have children. What do I do? Maybe God wants me to fix it on my own. Which, by the way, if that's your standard of operation, can I just tell you, you're in a good boat because I'm driving it. We tend to think we should fix it on our own. Verse 2, so Sarah said to Abram, the Lord has prevented me from having children. What does she do? She blames God. The first thing we tend to do. God, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you clearly messed up. You know, you done messed up. Doesn't work when you use God. Just me. She blames it on God. Go and sleep with my servant, she says to Abram. Perhaps I can have children through her. And Abram agreed with Sarai's proposal. Sarah is in a situation where she's being called to wait on God, and yet she chooses her own way. Again, I will tell you, no matter who you are or what you're walking through, the only thing harder or worse than waiting on God is wishing that you had. In verse 3, we read this. So Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian servant, and gave her to Abram as a wife. Abram agreed. This was a culturally, having a surrogate to provide a child was a culturally acceptable thing. And yet their time was no different than ours. There are things that are culturally acceptable that God says, this is not my best. And when we choose to do an end run around God because the culture says this is the way to go, it always ends in pain. We think it'll be different. We wish it'll be different. We think we have a good idea. And yet, adjusting to the culture instead of adopting what God says leads us to pain. This happened 10 years after Abram had settled in the land of Canaan. How long had they been waiting? 10 years. How old were they when they came in the land? 75. How old is she? 85. You do the math. seems like a problem. Verse 4, so Abram had sexual relations with Hagar, and she became pregnant. But when Hagar knew she was pregnant, she began to treat her mistress Sarai with contempt. Now, here's the thing. If you thought this was another Disney story from the Bible, you're starting to see it's not. Things aren't going well. This is messy, wouldn't you say? I mean, think about everything that's going on. As Sarai proposes this crazy idea, Abram, like the dummy that he was, agrees. Now, someone is pregnant, and oh, by the way, Hagar didn't even get a say in it. She didn't get a say. How do you think she felt? I'm just going to guess, but I'm going to guess that Hagar felt used and taken advantage of. But now she's a mom. What now? The text goes on and tells us that things went from bad to worse. See, Hagar is treating Sarai poorly, which we understand, and Sarai starts to get mad. Verse 5, Sarai said to Abram, "This is all your fault." Yes. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. "I put my servant into your arms, but now that she's pregnant, she treats me with contempt. The Lord will show you who's wrong, you or me." Isn't that interesting? So what does Abram do? I mean, Abram's like, happy wife, happy life. I thought I was doing the right thing. You're an idiot, okay? I'm sorry. But so what does he do? He caves again. Verse 6, Abram replies, "Look, she's your servant. You deal with her as you see fit." There's no, "I'm going to step up to the plate and be a man and actually like care for and protect and provide for my wife." He's like, "No, you take care of it." Guys, on a Mother's Day that's not about you, learn a lesson, okay? Like, for real. This is good, okay? It's free too, you know? Like, so Sarai, what does she do? She treats Hagar so harshly. Remember, she already feels used. She already feels taken advantage of. Sarai feels alone and abandoned. So what does she do? She pours out her feelings on Hagar. She treats her so harshly that what does Hagar do? She finally makes herself be alone. She runs away. Now, Hagar was alone. Just a hint, I'm guessing Abram was alone too. You got three people, all struggling and all alone. Hagar runs into the desert. She starts heading home. Egypt. She travels from Israel, which is north and east of Egypt. She starts traveling south and west. She heads right into the desert, a tough and harsh land, even today. In verse 7, while she's alone, we start to see something about who God is and what God does. Who God is and what God does. Verse 7, it says this, "The angel of the Lord found Hagar." Now, if you have your own Bible, or if you want to do this later, or if you're using YouVersion on your phone, this is something you want to underline or highlight. This phrase here, "angel of the Lord," is a phrase that happens over and over in the Old Testament. It's a reference to the, I'm going to use some big words here for a minute, pre-incarnate, before having a body, okay, pre-incarnate Jesus. It's a reference to God himself showing up and interjecting himself into the life of somebody who felt and was alone. Someone who felt and was used and abused. Someone who felt and was abandoned. And God shows up. What did he do? He found her. It wasn't that he lost her. It wasn't that he didn't know where she was. He pursued her. He pursued her. No matter how old you are, how young you are, no matter what you've been through, and certainly no matter what you've done, you need to know who our God is. He's a God who pursues. He pursues through our failures. Man, I'm thankful for that. He pursues through our struggles. He pursues through our hurts. He pursues when we're abandoned. He pursues when nobody else would pursue us, not even ourselves. God will chase after you. If you don't remember anything else, I hope you never forget this. God doesn't get tired of chasing after people who think they're lost causes. That's who God is. He found Hagar. If we can go back to verse 7, here's what it says. He found her beside a spring of water in the wilderness along the road to Shur. She is on her way home. Here's what God did. God saw her and went after her. That's what he did. Now that's good news to us as parents or not. It tells me that God's going to pursue my kids. Tells me that God's going to go after them, that he loves them, that he sees them, that he wants good for them. Tells me as a pastor that God is pursuing the people that he's called me to teach and guide. And that's helpful because this is a bigger job than me. And I can rely on him. And as a mom, this tells me you can rely on him too. You see, here's what Hagar begins to see. That God, even when she was alone in the wilderness, he saw her. This teaches us that I am not alone because God sees me. You know, from time to time we need anchors to latch onto. I told you about person that I met with 6 months ago, and when she came in and sat down with me with a friend, and I think she thought she was alone and that God was done with her. But he wasn't. He saw her. And he loved her. The angel speaks to Hagar in verse 8. He says this, "Hagar, Sarai's servant." Now, why? Hold on just a second. Why does it record this? Like, her name's Hagar. It's because he's making it clear he knows her. He knows where she's been. He knows her inside and out. God knows you. He knows where you've been. He knows you inside and out. It's who he is. It's what he does. Where have you come from and where are you going? Now, I'm sorry, this is a tense point in the message, but I don't know if you knew this or not, but this is where the song Cotton Eye Joe came from. Where did you come from? Where did you go? I'm sorry. I tried, I really tried to not say that. Okay, back to what really matters, okay? He's not asking because he doesn't know. He's asking because he wants to have a conversation with her about what's going on in her heart. Where did you come from? Where are you going? And she's honest. I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai. Okay. And here's how the Lord responds, okay? Verse 9. The angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her authority. Okay, this is what you are to do, okay? But then he goes beyond that. He makes a promise to her. This is what is so beautiful about who God is and what God does, okay? In verse 10, he says this, okay? He says, I will give you more descendants than you can count. That's big. In a culture where, right or wrong, I'm not saying it's right, I'm just telling you what we can see historically is that in a culture where for a woman to be able to have many children and to be fertile and to be bountiful, in that case, it was the highest of honors, okay? And for God to say to her, you're going to have more descendants than you can count. You're going to be the start of a great nation, many nations, in fact. This is the start, by the way, of all of the Arab nations. This is the beginning of all of the modern day Arab nations. It comes through Abraham. And unfortunately through Abraham's choice. Verse 11, the angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now pregnant and you're going to give birth to a son. You're to name him Ishmael, which has a meaning. It means God hears. It's not just that God sees, God hears. He's not missing you. He's not missing the things that you're going through. He's not blind to it. He's not ignoring it. He sees it and he hears. For the Lord has heard your cry of distress. I don't know if there are better words to comfort than this. For those moments when we're crying and no one sees. For those moments when we're hidden in a room crying out to God, begging God, talking to God, asking God. When in those moments when you're in a room filled with people and nobody knows you're filled with despair and you're asking God to do something. Who is God and what does he do? He sees and he hears. You are not alone because God sees you and God hears you. Here's how all of it wraps up. Hagar gets some information about her son. Here's what the text says. He, this son of yours, will be a wild man as untamed as a wild donkey. He will raise his fist against everyone. He will fight everyone, and everyone will be against him. Yes, he will live in open hostility against all his relatives. Now, not exactly like a bright and cheery Mother's Day card you've come to expect. But in a certain sense, what he's saying is, your son's going to be strong, and he's going to be a fighter. Now, there's a lot to this that we don't have the time to unpack today. But in verse 13, here's what he continues on saying. Thereafter, Hagar used another name to refer to the Lord. She starts giving a personal name to God that he didn't have before. The God who had spoken to her. She said, you are the God who sees me. She also said, have I truly seen the one who sees me? El Roy. That's his name. God, El Roy, who sees me. That's who he is. The God who sees, the God who hears. This had such an impact that we're told that the place where she was and had this interaction with God became known by a new name. She's on the road to Shur. She's at this well, this spring. It becomes known by something because of this interaction. You can still see these things today. This is what I love. This is so powerful. So what it says in verse 14, so the well was named Beer Lahai Roy, which means well of the living one who sees me. It can still be found between Kadesh and Bered. You can still find it today. Now, what does all of this mean? This means that God sees you and hears you, and he's not done. And so I'm urging you, trust God in the waiting. I don't know what you're waiting for. I don't know what you're going through. But I urge you, trust him. I want to tell you a story and show you a story. One woman who has been through it. And I want you to see what's happened as she's trusted God. Her name is Amber. Would you watch?
So I've been through many seasons as a mom, and I was married pretty young. I was a mom to Philip by age 22 and Dory by age 24, and I really enjoyed being a mom to them. But when we tried to have more kids, I had miscarriage after miscarriage, I think 3 or 4 miscarriages. This was a really tough time for me emotionally, and even though God had blessed me with 2 beautiful children, I really struggled to know why this was happening and what God was trying to teach me through this, but I knew that he was with me through everything, and I just really tried to trust him through everything that was going on. When Philip and Dory were really young, my husband became mentally ill, and it was a very tough time trying to juggle, you know, motherhood and caring for a sick husband. And even though there was a lot of stresses and things going on in my life, I knew that that wasn't a license for me to sin. And God really brought back verses from when I was a teenager. I relied heavily on 1 Peter 5:7, and it's cast all your cares upon him because he cares for you. And I knew that through all of this, God never left me. He was there. He really wanted me to just share my heart and to talk to him about what was going on. I know that God is a great conductor, and I know that he was directing my steps through everything, and I know that he was preparing me for my future through all of my trials that I was going through. God was teaching me a lot through this time, just that I needed to come to him and talk to him through the pain and the things I was going through. And my husband did improve, but for the next 5 years after, I did a lot of parenting alone. And it was at this time that I began serving again at church and reading my Bible on a consistent basis. I know God doesn't always give us the answers to our whys, but I understand now that he was preparing me for my future. In 2008, my husband became severely ill again, and he disappeared. 5 months later, we found out that he had passed away, and it was just 7 days prior to his disappearance that I found out again that I was pregnant with Brayden. God knew that I needed Brayden in my life. He allowed me to carry him to term. So I was a widow, single mom of 3. I was homeschooling with a newborn, but I had a really good support system. And I knew that in that place, in that moment, God saw me and that he was with me every step of the way. I can share with you story upon story of unexplainable peace and provision that he has given me through this time in my life. As a mom, my heart was broken for my children and for the future that they wouldn't have with their father. I know now that I could have done a better job helping them cope, but I am so, so thankful that God is the ultimate healer and that through my brokenness and my sinfulness, God was there for all of us through our family and friends and our community. God allowed me to remarry Andrew, and he took my children as his own, and he loved them as his own. And then he blessed me as a mom once again with Aaron in 2013. There's a 12-year age gap between my children, and because of that, I am in a rare motherhood stage. I've watched my oldest 2 grow up and leave the nest, but I still have a 14 and 10-year-old at home. I have felt the joy and the pride and the brokenheartedness of a child leaving home, yet still being in the mundane with dishes, laundry, and wondering what my real purpose is in life. Does God still see me and know me? in new and different ways, he's been telling me yes. I just need to be faithful in what he's called me to do today, whether that's vacuuming, school projects, sports, or wedding planning. He loved me enough to send his son to die so that I can have a new and abundant life with him. I am no one special. I am an introverted mom of four with little formal education from a small town in Pennsylvania. But I know that God sees me and he has a sovereign plan that he has laid out before the foundations of the earth. So what I want people to know who are hearing my story is that God sees you too. He knows you by name and he loves you. You might not feel it or see it now, but he has a plan for your life. You are not alone. You are not forsaken. You are not forgotten in whatever your motherhood journey looks like. My name is Amber Peterson, and I'm here to make more and better disciples for Jesus Christ.
See, God saw her and heard her, and he's working on her behalf. Now, my friend that came in 6 months ago and thought there was no hope, it's my joy to be able to tell you today that God has been changing her life, to be able to give her hope, a woman who had no hope, who felt abandoned and forsaken and forgotten, now is known and loved and telling others about the love of God. So here's what I urge you to do. No matter what stage of life you're in today, trust God. He sees you. He knows. Let me leave you with the last verse of this passage. In Genesis 16 and verse 16, it says this: Abram was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. You might be tempted to say, you know what, I'm past that stage. Guess what? You're not past the stage of trusting God, even when it hurts. Trust him. Let's see what he'll do. Father, thank you. Thank you for loving us, being kind to us, seeing us, knowing us. Thank you for your patience, even when we make incredible, incredible mistakes. When we take steps in directions we never should go. Thank you for being patient and kind. Thank you for loving us. And thank you that you see me and you know me. And you see and know everyone who's hearing this today. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.